The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1 with All Care Pharmacy. Expert advice to keep the whole family healthy at All Care, the largest Irish-owned pharmacy brand.
How are you today? How are you handling it? 51551 ray at rte.ie. We're all in this together, aren't we? And I think, and I'm not a huge fan of social media, but I think it's going to come into its own over the next few weeks. And the radio, not that it needs to come into its own, but it's going to be a huge part of people's lives. And we want to hear your voice. And the way we're going to do that is to use WhatsApp voice note. We should do a sting for that. WhatsApp voice note. So here's the number you want to put into your phone. 087-187-9101. 087-187-9101. 087-187-9101. If you put that into your phone, and then it'll give you an opportunity to create a contact, and it'll give you an opportunity to write the name of the contact, and that is RT Radio 1 WhatsApp. When you've done all that, you can send us a voice note. And the reason we want you to send us a voice note today is because, and it was interesting yesterday speaking to Stella O'Malley and Tacoma Nocter, and Stella was saying that now we have certainty. We have a new normality. And the new normal is that for the next probably 5 weeks, people are going to be at home together. And there's going to be parents who are in the company of their children, and there's nothing to fill the gaps. You know, there's no summer camps, probably won't be going to the cinema, no play dates, no parties, nothing like that. So they're left to their own devices. But we are a community, and we have all that knowledge out there, and we want to share it among everybody. So what we're asking you today, to that number, 087-187-9101, send us a voice note of your tips, your strategies. How do you keep the kids occupied? How do you keep them entertained? How did you do it in the past? How will you do it in the future? Is it jigsaws? Is it knitting? Is it slap them in the corner with a... I mean, slap them, put them in a corner, not slap them, put them in a corner with a computer. Probably not the best advice. Bring them out for a walk, get them running. What sort of structure do you have to your day? All of those things. So 087 187 9101. Say, hello, my name is blah, blah, and here's my tip. Here's my advice. And we'll play it out and we'll help everybody to get through this together. Just by way of diversion, and I think this is it's related because there is this sort of bubbling under anxiety and uncertainty, and it's, you know, it's there because, you know, we're in uncertain times. And what happens then is that's the time that you forget your keys, and that's the time that things happen. So, for example, I was cycling home yesterday evening, and I thought, oh, there's something on my desk that needs to be put into a drawer because it could be, you know, it was valuable enough. So I was ringing back to the office to see if there was anybody there so they could put it into the drawer. So just as I took the bag out of the pannier bag at the back of the bike to get my phone, a friend of mine rang, and I thought I'd push the button, you know, on those sort of unintentional calls, but he'd actually rang me. And then I started talking to him, and I was pushing the bike, and I nearly walked the whole way home talking to him, pushing the bike. Got home, and next thing was a number of missed calls, and my bag, my work bag, had been left into RTE because I dropped it on the N11 when I'd answered the call. And so thanks to whoever did that, they didn't leave a name, so thank you very much, because there was an iPad in that, all my, you know, my code tag, that's my ID for RTE. So thank you very, very much, whoever did that. Thank you, thank you, thank you. The other thing that's happened recently, and maybe you find that these, the little things are sort of maybe becoming bigger things. So I was bringing the dog out the other day, and I met this lady with a little Jack Russell, and there was a bit of snarling, you know, between the two of them. It had happened before. Our dog isn't usually a barker. I don't think that woman's dog is a barker. But whatever happened between the two of them, they weren't getting on. And then the lady bent down and picked up the Jack Russell. And then our golden retriever jumped. Now, it didn't, there was no pause or anything, but it was, you know, it was tense, very tense. And I tried to step between the dog and her, and it was all, ah! And then we ran off. And anyway, it's been playing on my mind. It's been playing on my mind. And I was hoping that I'd meet the lady the other day when I didn't have the dog, and I didn't, just to say I'm sorry and explain that our dog is usually well behaved and I don't know what came over him, all that sort of thing. Anyway, running around today with the dog on a lead, and I passed this lady, and she was gone past me, and I was gone past her, and next I heard her shout, Can I say this on the radio? Yeah. Asshole! Asshole! And I looked around, and in my head, I'd gone to, oh, obviously the other lady had told her the story. And now she's calling me that because I didn't control my dog, and it wasn't my fault at all. Asshole! Asshole! And then I looked, and I was between her and her dog. And then I listened more carefully, and the dog's name was Hansel. And I'd misheard it because my brain was working like that. So you just have to be, what I'm saying to you just have to be careful, because things get a little bit heightened at times like this. So we need to all, and I'm not going to say the C word, but we just, no, bring it, pull it back a bit. Rein it in, rein it in. Just that. And and we got this sense yesterday, which was lovely on the show. There's this sense of community. And I think Leo Varadkar, in his words yesterday, said it brilliantly. We'll get through this. You know, we're a great nation, all of those things. And Niamh, for example, who works on the show, she has decided to help some of her neighbours. So what she has done is she has typed up this note, and I'll read it to you now. And she has put it through the letterbox to some of the people around her area that she feels might need a little bit of a dig out. So it says, hello, Niamh here from number, I won't give her number, the house with the black door. In light of recent events, I just wanted to offer a bit of help in case it's needed. If that's popping down to the shop for you and leaving groceries outside your door, or if you need something in the chemist and can't go out, I'm more than happy to do that for you. My number is, obviously not going to read out the number, just call or text if there's anything you need. Isn't that a lovely thing to do? And actually, Jenny was saying she was going to do the same up where we live. And we have two kids, as you know, because probably go on a bit too much about them. And, you know, Jenny is faced into 5 weeks or whatever, keeping them entertained. We were talking about it this morning because I had to work from home until midday. So she was talking about her plans. And I said, why don't you put that into an email for me? And I'll read it out and I'll share it with the people, because we're doing that on WhatsApp anyway, through voice notes. So this is it. This is Jenny. So she says, social distancing, Jenny, my wife, social distancing with children is going to be difficult. The fact that things can't be broken up with play dates, trips to the cinema, shopping centres, play centres, etc., is making a lot of us stress about how we're going to keep our children happy and ourselves sane over the next few weeks. I think the only way to do it is to break the day up into segments, or it just looks like a long meandering mess ahead with all those hours and lots of moans of I'm bored. So, for example, from next Wednesday, and Jenny says, as the next few days are technically a holiday with St. Patrick's Day just around the corner and Monday would have been off, our days are going to look something like this from next Wednesday. Everyone up at the normal school time for breakfast, etc. 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. schoolwork. 10 o'clock to 10:15. Quick jump on the trampoline. 10:15 to 10:40. Snack time. 10:40 to 11:45. Reading time. Study time. 11:45 to 12:45. Art, Lego, whatever you want to do there. 12:45. Everyone helps to make the lunch. 2 to 3 hour long walk, not negotiable. Home time. The kids can also FaceTime their friends in the early evening if they want. Evening is dinner, movie time, etc. Also, I think it's only fair that when the person who's been out at work comes home, that's me. If the person who has been with the kids all day needs to get out, that's Jenny. For an hour, they can go for a walk or a run, or for some much needed headspace. Bedtime stays the same and get up time the same. This is really important. We'll see how long this lasts, but I already feel better after typing it. So there. That's that. Could you read out the WhatsApp number again? Of course I can. I think I have it in my memory. 087-187-9101. I had to look down for the 9. 087-187-9101. There it is. Homeschooling started at 10 a.m. I just discovered how much my 8-year-old wants to learn. The teenager, on the other hand, not so much. And I spent a few hours in the garden tidying up this morning. It was a lovely break from all the current news, says Anne. And would teachers consider running call centres and tracing contacts of coronavirus? It would seem a smart use of resources. You're right. I don't know how many teachers there are in the country. And some of them are doing great work with online tests, etc. We got an online test in Spanish this morning, arrived via email to our house. But there are people out there who are capable and been paid, and maybe they should be used in some other way. That's a good suggestion. This is a great opportunity for our people to clean up our country. Start with your garden, suggests Tom. So we've loads of people to talk to. And if you have any questions or anything, get them into us, 51551. And that voice notes on your advice on how to keep the children occupied, 087-187-9101. Hello, Ray. I'm Mary. I'm in Cork. Here's my tip. How about that? Yeah. And I was just in the bank and was very disappointed. No one in the queue was trying to maintain social distance. I did start it, but did get a look. There was no signage up to even remind people to do it, to try and keep a distance. Yeah, it's odd. After yesterday, we are, I can just speak for myself, but we're looking at the world differently. We're looking at the world differently. So I queued in a local deli to get me lunch, and the guy who came in after me, there was a metre away. Then I realised that I was probably too close to the man with his two children in front of me, so I stepped back. And then the man who had a metre between me and him, he stepped back. So we were creating that metre to 6 feet distance. And then I looked across the road and there was a playground, and there was a couple, an elderly couple, grandparents with their grandchild. And yesterday we had conflicting information for you here. Mary O'Rourke said one thing and Dr. Sinead said the other thing. And then the man on with Joe wasn't clear about the grandchildren, grandparents thing. So we're going to try and get clarity on that. What's the advice? What's the HSE advice on that? And we'll try and get that sorted before the end of the show today. So 51551, ray@rte.ie, 087-187-9101 for your voice notes. Thank you very much. Good afternoon. There he is, Mary Kennedy's nephew, Dermot Kennedy. It's a real Irish thing, isn't it? There's your man there singing on the radio. Mary Kennedy's nephew. Mary Kennedy's nephew. 51551 ray@rte.ie. 087-187-9101 for your voice notes on WhatsApp. Stephen says, I know that there will be a lot of very bored adults out there, and the last thing our hospitals and the economy need is a baby boom. So go easy, lads. Thanks, Stephen. Did the professor say it on Liveline there that maybe you shouldn't be having sex? Did he say that? Because I got a text from my wife. too much information maybe, but here you go, because we're in unusual circumstances here. Professor Martin in No Sex Shocker on Liveline. That was a text I got from my wife there. So I don't know. I didn't hear it myself. We were in a meeting. Many teachers are parents too, says that person. And the next 5 weeks are a real opportunity, says Louisa, to look at what life skills we really should be teaching our children. We parents do way too much for kids these days. They will be thoroughly independent and self-sufficient when this is all over. That's what Louisa has to say. And hello, Ray. A lot of teachers are working from home with their students doing online classes. I mentioned that already. And I was in the post office yesterday. 5 men ahead of me. We all kept social distance. And what's the story with communion? I was at Mass this morning and the priest prepared communion with his bare hands. I don't know. What I do know is that priests all over the country got instructions, stroke guidelines from the bishops during the week. And I don't know if communion was mentioned. I'd imagine it was. I'm a secondary school teacher, and I can assure you, me and any of my friends are teaching our students online. Yeah. And why are people making an issue out of this? It's simple. Stay away from everyone. If you can't, keep contact to a minimum. That's it. But of course, people are looking for permission to break the rules, says Eamon. Eamon, yeah, 5 weeks is a long time, you know, to keep a distance. And then there's the practicalities of childcare. And that's a huge thing, because a lot of people in this country depend on their parents, as in the children's grandparents, for childminding. So if the children can't be in the company of their grandparents, well, then that creates a huge problem. Hi, Ray, I'm Evine. I'm 10 and I'm sitting on my mum's bed doing my geography work because I'm off school and my mum is cleaning the room. Can you play Glorious by Macklemore? Well, we'll see what we can do. We're probably going to end up playing more music over the coming weeks because as it goes on, less and less people will be willing to come into studio. So we'll have to, you know, so we will be playing more music. So we'll keep that on file. Avine, age 10. Now, is it Avine or Evine? There's loads of ways to pronounce that. Avine, age 10, Evine, age 10. Well, I hope I got it right. One of them is right. 51551, ray@rte.ie.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Yeah, 51551 for texts or 087-187-9101. 087-187-9101 for your voice notes there on WhatsApp. Now, we know the schools are closed, and what didn't get a lot of coverage yesterday was the fact that cultural institutions are to close until the end of March as well. So museums and galleries and all those sorts of things. So that's going to affect the activities of tourists in this country. Kevin Maguire is the associate editor of the Daily Mirror, and he's on holidays in Cork, and he joins us on the line now. How are you doing, Kevin?
Very well, thank you.
Yeah,
you having kissed the Blarney Stone.
You what?
After kissing the Blarney Stone.
Today?
Today, yeah, it's open. It's interesting, because when I was coming yesterday, I was heading to Heathrow to get an Aer Lingus flight, and I was on the bus, and I saw on Twitter everything was shutting down, including, as you say, cultural institutions. I thought, no, the castle is going to be shut, but it's not. I got on a bus this morning, I went along, bought me ticket, and the stone is still open to be kissed. I wouldn't kiss a stranger in the street because of the coronavirus scare crisis. But I did find myself kissing the stone. They spray it with antiseptic before you do it. But it is there and still kissable.
Firstly, Kevin Maguire, seeing you on Sky and all that, you don't need to kiss the Blarney Stone because you have the gift of the gab already. And secondly, was there any special thing you had to sign? Were there any signs about, you know, risks because of the coronavirus or anything like that?
No, nothing. I didn't see a single sign. Nobody said anything when I bought the ticket, when I went round. The two assistants who are there, because you've got to lean backwards and down over the 90-foot drop. Vertigo, I think, was a bigger threat than coronavirus. But they don't say anything. And I asked if the spray was because of the virus, and one of them said, no, we always use it. They looked a bit embarrassed that I'd raised the virus.
Yes.
But there were certainly no warning signs. And when you're going along those, it's a very narrow climb up a stone staircase within the tower. You're in close proximity to people then, because it's so narrow, and the stone itself, well, there were a few others kissing it. I can't pretend it was packed, but of course it's out of season. It's still March. Easter hasn't happened. The weather's been a bit rainy down here in Cork today.
So how many people are we talking
going on as normal?
How many people are we talking were there when you were there?
Well, I went up. I didn't have to queue. I know you do have to queue sometimes in the summer. I kissed it after. I was just standing there a few moments. Someone else came along, kissed it. Three young women came along, were too frightened to leave. They didn't kiss it. So, there was a steady stream of people.
Okay. Did you not think twice about kissing it?
I did. I'll be honest. And when I got on the bus from Cork to go down there today, I was a slight apprehension. But to be honest, it was probably the relief and happiness it was open were greater. Somebody who I kind of take the view: wash your hands, keep calm, and carry on. Don't be reckless. But at the same time, life has to carry on.
Okay. Well, we put a call into them, and they've just got back to us now, as it happens. And here's the statement, Kevin. We've been having meetings this morning, and the decision has been taken. The kissing of the stone, the Blarney Stone, has been suspended for the first time in the castle's history, and will be for the foreseeable future. Garden and castle building are still open, but kissing the stone is suspended.
Well, I hope that doesn't mean it's unsafe after I just given it a smacker. But
You're one of the last there. While we have you on, a lot has been made about the difference between the approach in the UK to the coronavirus and the approach here. Schools are still open in the UK. Cheltenham went ahead. What's your sense of it?
Yeah, it's interesting. There is no coordinated international response. Well, in fact, this is a global disease going from country to country. There's a glaring error there that there's no common reaction. In the UK, Boris Johnson, who often just acts the fool, has kind of been quiet. He's let the chief scientific advisor and the chief medical officer speak, and he claims he is acting on their advice. And the reason they haven't shut schools, for instance, is they claim, well, kids are at low risk and they just go and congregate somewhere else. And they haven't taken other measures to try and limit people seeing each other, although football is now suspended, but that's football authorities that have done that. Because they say if you bring in restrictions too early, people get fatigued, get bored, and then they just go back to their old ways. It's very, very difficult. But the Taoiseach's announcement, whatever the merits of it, the kind of it gave the impression when I was heading to Heathrow that that island was shut, actually.
No.
I was expecting to get off the flight and find there was no public transport. It was mistakenly reported public transport wouldn't be there. Thinking everything's going to be closed. I was wondering whether my hotel would be admitting guests. But I've discovered life is pretty much as normal. Maybe it's the calm before the storm. Maybe Ireland, like the UK, we're just, you know, 2 or 3 weeks behind Italy and Spain, which are getting hit really, really hard. But I do like the fact, though, that people are calm and largely just going around their daily business, not out of complacency.
No, but they're informed. I think people are informed.
Yep.
And I think the government and the HSE have done a very good job of informing people what they should be doing under these circumstances. Do you think, Kevin, that is this anything to do with the fact that, you know, Brexit happened, and now the UK has its sovereignty back, you know, in full. Is this Boris Johnson flexing his muscles in some way, saying, well, yeah, we'll do it our way?
He certainly does like to do that. And I saw Nigel Farage, who, of course, was, along with Johnson, the two politicians most responsible for Brexit. He was saying, well, the UK not being part of the Trump ban on flights to Europe showed that the UK is now treated as a sovereign nation, overlooking the fact Ireland is also exempted because yes, both are not in the Schengen, borderless movement. I think he does like to be different. There's no doubt. And too often, there can be a British-UK sense of superiority in the world. Okay. I hope that's not the case here.
And what was the reaction to Cheltenham going ahead in the UK, or was there any?
Very mixed, actually. You know, in fact, the Gold Cup's been run now, and people are very divided. And some are screaming for something to be done and all mass gatherings to be banned. And then other people, I just say, well, really, what's there to worry about? It's not a great deal. It may, to some extent, be what age group you fall into. Because if you're in the over 60s, you're far more likely to find coronavirus to be fatal than you are if you're young. So I think there is something of a generational split.
I know, but you see, I suppose the problem, and there's been a lot of screaming about it here, is the problem that those 15,000 people will now come back and they will go into their places of work, they'll go into their homes, they will have elderly parents and all of that. And that's why people are up in arms, I think, about Cheltenham.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. You could be quite safe yourself in the
sense. Yes. Yes.
It may be uncomfortable, but it's not going to be fatal to you. But you pass it on, and you pass it on to an elderly relative or workmate or neighbour or somebody with an underlying health problem who's weakened their immune system, fighting cancer, heart, lung conditions. Yeah. And, I mean, you could kill them. You could inadvertently kill them, which is why we all have to be very, very careful.
How long more are you spending down in Cork, Kevin?
Alas, I have to go back tomorrow to write a column in the Mirror on Sunday. Otherwise, I'd probably quite happily at the moment spend the rest of my life here.
Okay.
My grandfather's from Cork, but all the records, of course, got burned in the Civil War. So there we are.
Have you tried to find your records? Have you traced it back? No, because there's other ways of doing it. But anyway, we'll talk on another day. Love Kevin. He's always fighting on Sky News. I love Kevin Maguire. Never miss him. And his sidekick, Andrew Pearce, on Sky News. That's from a Dublin granny. So you fans out there. Listen, enjoy the rest of your short stay. And thanks for taking our call.
A pleasure. Thank you.
See you, Kevin.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Or Ray at RTE.ie. Now, it has been a mad, crazy, unprecedented week. We are in uncharted waters. But life goes on, as Kevin was saying, and new life arrives. And we have to say congratulations to Paul Hosford, who became a dad for the first time this week. How are you doing, Paul?
Hi, Ray. Thanks very much.
Yeah, and I suppose you didn't do much of the work. It was Patrice who did all the work. How are you doing, Patrice?
I'm good.
Congratulations.
Thanks very much.
So what you call the babby?
It's Tom Kieran.
Ah, Tom. Very strong name. Very good name. And is there a history of Toms in the family? Is that it?
Paul's granddad's Tom.
Right. Okay. And what did he weigh in at, Tom Jr.?
8 pounds and 13.5 ounces, a bit bigger than I expected.
Wow, that's a half a pound short of a half an ounce short of 14 pounds. Is that it? Is that my right? No. No, it's not. Somebody will correct me there. No, it's actually 2.5 ounces short of 9 pounds. So that's a big one. So, Paul, it's been a crazy week for you. So describe the week then.
Yeah, so, I mean, we knew that something was going to start moving. The plan was yesterday. I'm actually losing track of days. I was in work as normal on Monday. I'm a political correspondent with the Irish Examiner, so I was in Leinster House on Monday as normal, kind of covering the latest in this outbreak. And on Tuesday morning, the plan was to go into work because we thought Patricia was going to be induced yesterday. But we kind of knew early enough there was a bit of pain there, so kind of we knew this was the start of it. So Tuesday evening, we drove into the rotunda, and you set yourself up thinking, Jesus, this is gonna be here now in the next hour or so. But it wasn't until Wednesday night that Tom made his arrival. He made us wait for him. He was about a week and a half over anyway, so right. We were already a bit kind of impatient for
him. So how long was that labour, Patrice?
I'd say from when the pain started, I'm calling about 36 hours.
Whoa.
Yeah. And I was trying to do as much at home, but the contractions were coming quick and strong, so yeah. We had to head in. But he wasn't moving anytime soon.
And that's a thing that you'd remind Tom Jr. about in the future, I'm sure.
He's never living it down.
Okay. So you were in there, Paul, then on Tuesday, and you could still go in and out of the hospital, could you?
Yeah, so we'd seen last week we were in for a scan on Friday, and literally just as we got home Friday evening, the rotunda tweeted that visitors would be restricted, so anyone who'd had a baby wouldn't be able to have anyone other than the nominated partner. Mm. And anyone going in and out of clinics, so anyone who was going to get a scan, their partner couldn't be there. Anyone who was going into a class, their partner couldn't be there. It was just the mother. So it was very, very quiet. The whole time we were there, Tuesday, Wednesday, very, like, just kind of eerily quiet in a way, just because there's such a big gender divide, so there's very few men around. The men who work there are obviously there, but there's no kind of buzz of a whole lot of people coming to meet visitors or that kind of thing. So it was very, very odd. And then yesterday I went in and I was with Patrice and Tom by the bed. And I think at about 2:30, a midwife came around and said, look, they're going to start restricting all visits now. Even nominated partners, they're going to be restricted. She said, there's a chance security might come and get you now. The midwives were saying, look, we're not going to kick anyone out if they're already here. But there's a chance you might not get back in if you go again. So if you leave, when I left then at 8:30, they said to me, look, if your wife is still here tomorrow, you won't be allowed in. If she's coming home, you can come to the front door and we'll kind of go and get her and the baby and bring them down to you rather than have you walking through the hospital.
Right. So that's the reality now for dads. You just got in sort of under the radar, so to speak. You it was only today, and as it happens, Patrice is out, so you're on your way home. You're at home, are you?
Yeah, we got home today.
Right. Okay. How does it feel, Patrice?
It's a bit bizarre, but I'm definitely a lot comfier on my couch than I was in hospital. But I do feel sorry, like it is awful, like knowing like you can't have a nominated person beside you, your partner with you. But I think they're still allowing it for labour and delivery. But I know a friend of mine is due a baby and she's very nervous with the idea of, well, I'm going to be in hospital for a day or two and I can't have someone come in to me.
Mm.
And
yeah.
that is scary.
Well, it is, because
you're tired.
And you're very vulnerable at that time, aren't you?
Yeah, but the staff are amazing. And that's what I will say, is that they don't like it as much as they hate having to do it. They're kind of wondering, how is it going to affect the moms? Are they going to feel isolated without having someone to come in to them?
Yeah.
And that's what they even said to me. They were like, we're just going to try and get you home, because maybe you'd be more supported at home instead of having you sitting here for an extra day, just because technically we should keep you in for 48 hours when maybe letting you go home 6 hours earlier than 48 might just give you a bit more boost.
Yeah. How was the whole getting the baby seat into the car? Did that work out okay?
I think Paul has been practicing.
Yeah, I've been fairly obsessed with things like that. So I've had it in and out. Before I even took off for the Rotunda today, I put it in and out three
times.
I was making sure. Ray, just to quickly make one note, the security staff at the Rotunda are not the people who are enforcing this. And even today, when I went to the door of the Rotunda, they were in arguments with people who were trying to get in. And I understand that people are really, really anxious, but have a bit of compassion for the people
yes,
who are
of course.
In front of you. Yeah, you know, we were told by somebody that a security guard was spat at a couple of days ago because somebody wasn't allowed in for a scan. And that, like, look, you said it yourself, we're in uncharted territory here. Nobody's ever dealt with anything like this. Just give people a bit more latitude than you normally would. Just take a step back. Try and keep these things in perspective. I was yesterday, the thought of not being in with Patrice and Tom was devastating in a way, because you just want to be close to them, and you know yourself, you just want to be there. It's a very special time, but in perspective, it's not the worst problem in the world to have.
No, and you're home now, and Mammy and Babby are in good health. And you sound the most anxious of the three. I'm actually talking to you. Patrice, you sound very relaxed.
I think that's our partnership. I just keep calm and just
is that it? Right. And Paul tries to get the car seat in three times before he goes. Yeah. But I can understand it, because I ended up years ago when Tom was born going in for a checkup, and I couldn't get the car seat out. So I had to get Jenny to go in with him in her arms. And then I went on to YouTube to find out how to take it out. The embarrassment of it all. But there you go.
The first time I took the car seat out with the Isofix, I did somehow manage to connect them together, and I couldn't get it apart.
I was
like, oh God, this is a good start.
So can I ask about is there a room ready?
Ish.
And did you know Tom was going to be a boy?
No, it was
no.
a surprise.
All
so
right.
So even when we gave birth, they said, he's here. And I was like, oh, it's a boy. And they were like, oh, we actually just say he. We don't actually know.
All right. And what were you expecting? Because people have a notion or...
I thought it was a boy from the get-go, and Paul thought it was a girl.
Right. Okay.
There was a told you so in the delivery room.
Right. Well, listen, congratulations again. You all sound very happy, and welcome to the world, Tom Jr. Thanks, Paul. Thanks Patrice. Mind yourselves.
Bye.
See you now.
You.
Bye.
Bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Or 5 on 5, 5, 1. Wow, the days are long. I'm a stay-at-home mum of three. They're really testing me over the last few days. 6-year-old, 2-year-old and 1-year-old. They're bored quickly. Yeah, it takes a lot to entertain them. And just out shopping in Gorey, says somebody else, can't believe the amount of children hanging out in droves around town. Surely the objective of closing schools was to stop the close contact between pupils and others. And that's what they got wrong in Italy, and we need to get it right here, is that they treated it as a bit of a holiday. It ain't a holiday. So we can't be congregating in pubs and places, and teenagers can't be congregating in the local shopping centre or wherever they congregate. That's not the plan. And we might put a call into Dr. Sinead Byrne again, because she's very adamant about this, and people need to be reminded. And I have to say, at a practical level, like, people were going to have 4 days off here. A lot of schools, most of schools were closed on Monday, so maybe families had plans, and there is that air of a bit of a holiday, but it ain't a holiday. And we spoke yesterday to Coleman Nochter and to Stella O'Malley, and today Alison Keating is on the line, psychologist who's a regular on the show. Alison, you how many children have you got?
Three.
What ages are they?
Yeah. 10, 8 and 4.
Right. And do you work from home, or what's your situation?
Well, not normally, but I mean, as a psychologist, I've just said to all my clients, I can do it online. So when the call came in yesterday, I just put that plan into action. And so I'm trying to work from home. My husband's working from home. So there's 5 of us at home. But, you know, we have to do what's right, you know. And like you're saying there, this isn't a holiday and this isn't a test run. So I think we have a duty to kind of act in a very socially responsible way to try and have an impact here, a positive impact.
Just as a parent first, so, you know, it looks like it's going to be 5 weeks. The 2 weeks is probably going to go into the next week, and then we're into our Easter holidays. And that is a challenge, isn't it? Because we don't have the usual activities that we'd have during a real holiday period. You know, we don't have camps. We can't do play dates, we're told. It's still a question mark over whether we can visit grandparents. Can't go to the cinema. So you've obviously put a bit of thought into this. And what have you come up with?
So I'm just going all virtual, and say within my family, like, there's 10 grandkids, like, locally. So we've just decided that's it. We're not going to go down to my mum and dad. And, like, even if we drop down dinner or something to my parents, we're going to do, I said to my sisters, why don't we do, like, virtual dinner so you can have, you know, FaceTime and have them at the table, so people can eat together. I think you can do virtual play dates. So this is where technology is going to come into its own. And I think rather than seeing it as, you know, oh, this is, sure, it's going to be a challenge, but honestly, the consequences are enough for us to actually be prudent about this. And I think, you know, we have to be flexible and adaptive. And guess what? That's what humans do best, you know. So we just have to adapt the situation as it is. And maybe we can have a reframe that yeah, there is going to be none of these kind of extracurricular activities. But, you know, what can we do? What can we do at home? Of course, it's not going to be easy. But I think it is very important to really see and repeat the same thing, that it's not a holiday. The social distancing is going to be real. It's going to be hard. It might work today, but the kids are going to get bored. Of course they are. So it's just about everyone working together as a team as much as possible and being normal and human about it. There's going to be squabbles. People's heads are going to be wrecked. But, you know, it's a small price to pay to have an impact on slowing this down and hopefully having an impact.
And you know, I was talking to the team upstairs and listening to people ringing into Liveline there, and there is an anxiety around this. And if people aren't anxious for their own health, they're anxious for the health of elderly loved ones or immunocompromised friends or family they might have. So is there any advice you can give to people around this, around anxiety and how to cope with it?
I suppose we just have to understand kind of the function of anxiety is often, sometimes it's fear that there isn't a reason. But at the moment, when people are saying, okay, there actually is a reason to be fearful, I would move it from anxiety to recognizing the function of fear. And the function of fear is for us to listen to the guidelines that are coming from, you know, the proper lines of information from the doctors, from the HSC, and to take the fit.
No, we lost it there. We lost it. That was Alison Keaton there. So she's saying sometimes that fear is a negative thing, but on this occasion there is something to be fearful of. And the best way to cope with that is to take the advice that we've been given over and over again from the HSE and the experts. And you can go to hse.ie for more advice. Now, Dr. Sinead Byrne is on the line. We spoke to Dr. Sinead Byrne yesterday. She's a GP down in, is it Ringsend?
Exactly right, Ringsend. Yeah, Irish Town Ringsend.
Irish Town Ringsend.
That's where I am.
Okay. So you think that people aren't taking this seriously, Sinead?
No, I don't. I think there is a group of people who are taking it seriously, but there's definitely a group who are not. You know, maybe they're the kind of people who never take these things seriously, but I think in another week or two, you know, there could be a lot of people very regretful that they haven't. Ray, so just, I suppose, my main message, and I was speaking to a friend of mine, texted me this morning, Dr. Anne-Marie McLaughlin. She's a respiratory consultant in St. James's, and she's very much at the coal face of what's going on, to give her a buzz back, and just very much that she wanted the message to be put out there that you know, when creches close and schools close, that means that we're to stay at home with our kids, you know, or get somebody in who's not sick to mind them. But that means no play dates, no mingling with other children, no parties, to basically avoid mixing, and certainly no grandparents minding children, because the thing is, children fare out fine by and large for most of this, but they're the vectors. They're what is going to make somebody older and very vulnerable, sick, and potentially die. So, you know, visiting a granny or having that sort of contact, you know, granny's probably a bit older, or anybody over, you know, in their late 70s or 80s, they are absolutely at risk of this.
And
you know,
even if everybody,
we're talking about.
But even if everybody does the required hygiene, that they wash their hands,
yeah,
and all of that, that, so you're saying no visits to the grandparents?
No, definitely not. Absolutely not. And I think this could go on for, you know, quite a while. It's like, it's a marathon, not a sprint. But just nothing unnecessary. Like, you really shouldn't be meeting people, particularly grandparents, you know, people that are older, anyone with an immunocompromised condition, a chronic condition, because they're much more at risk. So, you know, it might be kind of, I think some people probably think that it's, oh, this is kind of an enforced holiday by the government, that, oh, we're all off school, we're all off creche, but let's meet up, or we'll catch up and, you know, entertain the kids for a while. That is really not on, because if we kind of work as a community, as a team, we're actually, we'll save lives, and we've one chance to get it right, and that's now, by acting right now. I think there's some people that don't believe it, you know. You know, like, if you study science, that you understand how dangerous viruses are, particularly new novel viruses that mutate, that you've got no treatment for and no vaccine. But if we work together, we can absolutely reduce death rates and sickness from this.
So it's
going to go on for a while, this kind of...
There are people listening now who have their grandchildren in the house because their children are going off to work today. And that's, they've been doing that for, you know, a number of years. And that's the situation in a lot of households. So you're saying to them that stop doing that.
Oh, yeah, they're putting themselves at risk big time, you know. It's the grandparents.
And even now that the children aren't mixing with other children, they're still putting themselves at risk.
Yeah, they are, absolutely. Because children as well can be asymptomatic. They can appear absolutely fine, but they may well have it, you know, and it could just be a head cold or a day or two before the head cold becomes obvious. But absolutely, grandparents are putting themselves at risk. And I know it's a nightmare when the creche is closed. I'm in the same position myself, you know, where my kids are in, you know, 3 days a week, and I'm trying to kind of organise somebody who's not now, who works in the creche, that could come to our home, you know, to mind them, provided that they're well, and that also we're not sick. But, you know, the day that maybe I get sick or one of the kids gets sick, that's it. I can't go to work, and certainly I wouldn't have anybody coming into the house, because I don't want to put anyone else at risk. So it's just a kind of a day-by-day sort of basis that we're kind of making decisions, because it really is, although we can't see it, like today, even when I've come in the afternoon, I'm inundated with calls now. Like, there's about 3 cases that I'm certainly listening to them that they have COVID-19, and I can't actually get them tested because I'm waiting so long for public health to be able to answer the call, because there's obviously so many GPs trying to get them tested.
Has the testing not changed now? Did I not hear that on the news?
Well, I can't. The number I have been told to ring for public health, I'm on hold.
Okay, we'll look that up. Yeah. Okay.
You know, it's still not ringing through.
Okay.
You know, I'm not getting through to the person in order to get the person tested. So, there's a couple of people I need to sort out kind of now before, you know, the end of the day, where they need testing.
Okay.
You know, because obviously it's much easier if you know you have it for sure. So I have them very much self-isolating, but there's one person who has, you know, shortness of breath, and they have a little bit of chest pain with their cough as well. You know, they've no previous history of anything, any underlying condition. So they're, you know, not as much at risk.
So what's
concerned about them.
What's going to happen eventually? Will at any stage you be able to do the test?
Possibly, you know, but we don't know yet. I think it may have to come to that.
How would you feel about that?
Well, the day I start doing testing, I suppose I'll potentially, you know, we'll pick this up as well, as a lot of my colleagues are. Like, we need the protective equipment to do it. We need to be fully equipped for it, because if I contract COVID-19, then I can't come into work, you know, and that's down a doctor. That means one doctor less in surgery. and there's no one really to replace me. So even where I work in St. Vincent's as well, in the headache clinic, you know, there's a plan that not all doctors are going to be in at the one time in case somebody gets sick.
Yes.
You know, so trying to rotate.
And that's a big challenge, doctors, isn't it? The frontline health workers, because obviously, as you said yesterday,
really at risk.
You're at risk, yes.
And they're at risk of bringing it home to their families.
And you're the people we need to be healthy.
Yeah, so that is very much, you know, that's why we don't want people coming in unless triaged by phone, and very necessary, because otherwise you could be down a vital kind of staff member, you know, a nurse or a doctor. It's going to be very testing times, but as a community, we can definitely have the best outcome possible by taking the advice from the HSE and the government, but staying at home means staying at home, right? And if you need to go out and get a bit of headspace to go out to an open space with your family,
and that's important that people do, yes, but and that's important that people get out of the house
but don't
congregate. Now,
no,
Sinead,
just
people want clarity on this. I care for my 90-year-old mother at home. Myself and my two children live with her. What does the doctor on the show recommend for me to do?
Yeah, I mean, I try to cordon off one part of the house where, you know, your mum is. I'd be trying to kind of very much keep the kids well away from her. There's a section, her room, maybe a bathroom that they're not allowed to go to. You know, I would be having sort of bleach, cleaning down surfaces. I would absolutely just keep them away. Try to explain to the children that, you know, there's a virus going around. It could make granny very, very sick.
Okay.
You know, so keep them away. Very difficult if you're in a small house, but I think you need to be really vigilant. Hand washing again. You know, anyone sneezing or coughing, do it into your elbow. Wash your hands again. Get some hand cream because your hands are going to get sore.
And washing, coming into a house is hugely important, isn't it? The minute you come into a house, to wash your hands before you do anything else.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And then, you know, kind of somebody to go around the door handles as well at a point in time with
wipes.
If you have some dessert. I know it's so hard now because it's getting snapped up.
Okay.
In the shops, but like bleach is generally easy enough to get. So you can kind of get a bit inventive and sort of see what you have at home to get rid of the germs.
Sinead, have a good weekend, and I'm sure we'll talk to you again
you too,
next week.
Ray, absolutely.
Okay, mind yourself.
You too. Thanks, Ray.
That's Dr. Sinead Byrne there. 51551@rt.ie and 087 187 9101. For your WhatsApp voice notes, and we'll get to them in a moment. Advice from parents all over the country as to how to occupy your children. Just saw there Olivia Kelleher, RT News, reporting that a drive-in coronavirus test facility has opened in Cork City, with medical staff in protective clothing swabbing referred persons through their car windows. Contractors worked in recent days to bring two disused buildings at St. Mary's campus in Gurnabraher on the north side of the city up to speed for usage by medical personnel. And a spokesperson for Southwest Hospital Group confirmed the involvement of the health service in a significant range of preparations for the rapidly evolving situation related to COVID-19. So I saw they were doing that in the UK and I think in Northern Ireland as well. So that's happening in Cork. And my daughter-in-law is working in a cafe in our village today and has just told us the place is full of elderly people and children and no social distancing. Maybe the message needs to be reinforced. And please tell parents that children are not off school to go out and meet their friends. Groups wandering around the streets, shops have people no sense. And I can't understand the selfishness of the general public. We are asked to be vigilant, stay out of groups, etc. Why are parents allowing teens into town in groups, etc.? It's because it's easier than having them at home, says this person. There is little respect for each other. And how long does it take for the message to get through? In a shop earlier, a woman coughed into her hands. She then put her hands on trolley. Some minutes later, she was handling clothes on the rails, says that person. But we need to be nice to each other and respect each other. We will get through this. And I know the temptation is that if you are doing all the things that you've been told to do and you spot somebody doing something that's against the rules or against the guidelines, the temptation is to go and tell them. But you just need to be respectful and hold back, and let's get the message out there and nudge people forward so that we're all doing the same thing and we're all in this together. And that's a good message. And we were asking for your help this afternoon for advice on how to occupy the children, and we offered you to send voice notes into our WhatsApp number 087 187 9101. And Helena and Ruby were on to us. Hello.
Hi. My name's Helena.
My name's Ruby. And we went for a big walk in the forest. And now we're home and we're baking bread and cookies.
Aha! Walking the forest and then baking. That's lovely. Kathy Kelly.
Hello, Ray. This is Kathy Kelly. I was thinking a great thing that you can do with the kids at home is try and set up some quality time together. We've started doing this funny thing where we play card games in the evening, and we've been, I've been relearning because my 25, because my husband has been teaching the kids 45, which is one of those wonderful old country games. And it's hysterical. We are having so much fun with it.
Snap! Sorry. Terry is in Kilcock in County Kildare. How are you doing, Terry?
Hey, Ray, one suggestion would be to have the children watch out the back the birds. Maybe count the log of any birds in the garden, learn about the birds, get back to nature, and log on to Birdwatch Ireland, let them know what you're seeing in the garden. Might help. And educate the children too. Terry Kilcock, see you, bye.
Terry Kilcock, thank you very much. And there's a bird in your name. Well, not in your name, but in your address.
Hi, I'm a youth worker with plenty of experience working with young children and teenagers. And I think the best way to engage children in some form of a roster while they're off school is to give them a sense of ownership over the roster, try to get some buy-in. And usually how we do that is we have a contract. So try to get the young people to engage in a contract about what they think and how they think their day should be organised. So, for example, the social, the recreational, jobs around the house and stuff, I find that is a lot more effective, and it actually prevents an awful lot of disharmony within the family. So maybe that should be a starting point for a lot of parents out there.
That's very good advice, youth work person. So if they have buy-in into the schedule, then they're more likely to follow it. Good advice. Catherine has five boys. Oh, Catherine.
Hi, my name is Catherine. I have five boys, 17, 15, 14, 13 and 7. And we have kept busy by getting into fitness. We have all this gym equipment that we're not using. So we now have scheduled school time from 10 to 2 every day with little breaks in between, and we're going to have at least 2 hours of activity outside. We live in a rural area, so we're very lucky in that sense. And we're going painting the house, we're going decorating, we are spending a lot more time together than we normally would. I don't think I've ever spent 2 full weeks with my children, but we're grateful to have each other and to be well, and I think that is our main priority at the moment.
Ah, that's Catherine with five boys there. And of course, a lot of people have been suggesting both texts and emails art. Will Sliney is an artist for Marvel, Star Wars, Spider-Man and also for Everton. And he lives in Cork. And he has thrown down the gauntlet, so to speak, Will, to get people drawn at home.
Maybe so, yeah. It seems to have been something that's taken off and a bit of fun. I don't know about giving them out rules or whatever, but yeah, it's going well so far.
So what are you getting people to do?
Well, like, I basically went online last night and people had already started kind of sending me art, like just sending in drawings of their kids were doing. So it brought a bit of a smile to my face. So I thought, why not put out a bit of a challenge out there each day and give people a topic to draw? And it's gone a bit mad. I'm getting a drawing every couple of minutes now. So it's just picking up something for kids to do.
Yeah. So today, have you given them guidance? Have you given one of your drawings out there and get people to copy it? Is that it?
Yeah, exactly. I just put up a picture of Spider-Man. So I just did one that I did. And some people are copying it, some people are calling it in, and some people are drawing their own ones. And I'll keep kind of doing that for as long as I can in terms of, like, every day if I pick a new topic, I'll put up a drawing, you know. But just people, like, a lot of people are asking, what can they do with it? It's whatever they want. And there just seems to be lots of kids spending a lot of time drawing now, which is nice.
Yeah. So it's at Will Sliney.
Yes. Yeah. I have a nice rare name, so it's easy to find.
It is a rare name. Where does it come from?
Yeah. I believe it's a Cork one. They were so many Fitzstevens back in the day, so they changed it over to Machlivna, and there you go. So, yeah.
It's one of the advantages of being an animator and a drawer is that you can work from home.
Mm.
And you do you?
I do, yeah. I've been working from home for about 10 years now. So I've graduated from working in my own bedroom to the spare bedroom. And now I'm finding a room that's built for it. So
right. It's
funny. I'm well used to working from my own space now.
Have you got children?
I do have a 1.5-year-old, so he's just learned how to open the door into the studio, which is a bit of a challenge. So that's the newest one with him now.
Right, at least you won't be talking to the BBC when he comes into the room like that man from a few years ago.
I know, yeah. Yeah, that seems to be everyone's worried about that at the moment.
Yeah, and what would you, if people asked you, you know the way they do the break down the drawings?
Hmm.
Have you done that for people? You know the way you break it down so you do it step by step?
People are asking, and I'm just going to see what I can do, because we'll be doing this, like this will be going on for a little while.
Yes.
So I might see if I can figure out a way of like doing a free class online.
Would you?
Or something
that'd be
like
brilliant.
That. Yeah,
and we talk to you again so. And we tell people it's there and, you know, we'll do something with you. That'd be nice, wouldn't it?
Yeah, sure. I used to do it with watching Don on the Den, so there you go.
Oh, there he goes. It's like, yeah. And we're on from 3 o'clock, Will, so it's like the old days, just on radio.
Yeah, there you go.
Right. So that's a deal. Thanks, Will. Have a great weekend. Thank you very much. That's Will Sliney there. And we'll come back to Will on that. Now, Archie, I don't know if you heard this, but no audiences are allowed. So tonight on the Late Late Show, Ryan Tuberty will be in an empty studio. Well, not really. He'll have camera people and he'll have his guests, but he won't have an audience. And on Sunday night, Dancing with the Stars, they'll be dancing on their own. Well, not exactly. They'll have their partners and the judges, but they won't have an audience. Larry Bass, how are you?
Hey, Ray.
Yeah, this is sort of, obviously, we're in unprecedented times. When did you get the news that you can't have an audience?
Well, I think it was, once the Taoiseach made his announcement yesterday morning, it was pretty much decision made for all meetings like this. And I think, to be fair, the Taoiseach, we're probably ahead of the game in terms of other countries and how we try and meet this virus.
Mm. So I was going to ask you what's it going to be like, but you don't know because you've never done it before.
Well, we haven't done it for the live show, but every week obviously we run a full dress rehearsal as if it's the show in an empty studio with just the camera crew, similar to the Late Late Show is going to be. So we're well used to running the show without an audience. It's going to be strange. And you know, we do know that the audience is there, just not in the studio. They're all at home, hopefully enjoying the show.
And more people will be watching from home, sort of ironically, because people can't go out and they can't do things. So you'll have a huge audience at home and no audience in the studio.
Yeah, we want people to maybe take their time, take a little bit of time out and a little bit of light relief with all of this, you know, happening all around us. This is a time for the families to actually get together in their living room and take the time to enjoy something that, thankfully, for the last 10 weeks, everyone has been enjoying. And we've got a cracking semi-final and all four acts are really looking to try and get their place into the final, which will also be done without an audience.
So name them. You've Ryan.
First up on Sunday night, we've got Aidan and Emily. They'll be dancing Viennese Waltz to a Westlife song, followed by Ryan Andrews and Julia doing a samba to Lolo Jamba. Then followed by Lottie Ryan and Pasquale doing a quick step to Don't Mean a Thing, Lady Gaga and Tony Bennett. And finally, Grania Galena and Kai are doing a foxtrot to Falling by Harry Styles. And then, uniquely, a new twist on this year, following the break, they all come back and do a second dance. This time they're doing trios. So Aidan and Emily will be joined by pro dancer Laura Nolan to do a salsa. Ryan and Julia will be joined by Karen Byrne to do an American Smooth. And then Lottie and Pasquale will be joined by Ryan McShane to do a cha-cha-cha.
So it's a trio, that's what you're calling it, as opposed to a threesome. Yeah, a trio.
And then
right.
Finally, Grania and Kai will be joined by Stephen Vincent from Charleston.
And just, there is going to be a challenge for you, I know that, because I know from working on television that you allot a certain amount of time for applause and laughter, and that won't be there anymore.
We work through that and we rehearse that as, you know, you have to meet these challenges and get on with it. There'll probably be a little bit more talking from the judges, a little bit more fun and games with Nikki up in the celebrity box after each dance. But, you know, there's a great team working on the show and they're looking forward to rising to this challenge as well.
Larry Bass, executive producer of Dancing with the Stars. Good luck on Sunday and we'll all be tuned in. Thanks, Larry. Thank you.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, we're all going to have to be doing a lot more cooking at home. And we had this planned for today anyway, but the Daily Dish's new book by Gina Daly and Mr. Dish, who's also known as Carol Daly. You're very welcome. Thanks for coming
in. Thank you very much for having us.
And we also have an air dryer in as a guest as well. Lots of people
fryer.
Here.
Air fryer.
So you're air fryer, sorry, not an air dryer. An air fryer. So tell us about the air fryer.
Okay, so this is basically just like a tabletop oven.
Right.
So it takes 2 minutes to heat up, you don't even need to heat it up, and you just throw everything in and you can cook at in it.
Okay, so it's different to an Actifry thing.
Yes. An Actifry has a paddle that makes a mess of the food.
Well, one thing, right, first of all, I'm going to sell your book. It's a great book and brilliant. And what you're trying to do is recreate takeaway food at home, and you do it successfully if the pictures are anything to go by.
That's right.
But one big advert for the air fryer are your chips. Are they actually your chips?
They're my chips. 100%.
They're your chips.
Everything in that book.
Were cooked in that air fryer, right?
Were
there.
They?
Yeah. Was made in our kitchen, so that's
they look amazing.
They are amazing.
They are amazing. Now, your story, Gina, because you have 100,000 followers, so people sort of bought into your life. So what weight were you? What happened and what happened?
Well, at one point I was 22 stone. So right. After having my little boy, I kind of got a bit sick and I lost a bit of weight through my, like, just, I had to have a healthy diet. I had gallstone problems and I had no choice but to eat well. And I just liked the way I felt after, obviously, losing a bit of weight. Clothes were getting looser. So then I kind of said, right, I need to do something here. I started a slimming group and I lost 4 stone in 4 months.
Right.
So I lost it quite quick. So in total, I'd lost 8 stone. Loved how I felt, but I just didn't love the food that I was eating. So I very quickly fell off the rails.
When you fell off the rails, what were you eating when you fell off the rails? Was it takeaways?
Like, yeah, like I was overweight because I loved crap food.
Yeah,
convenience food.
Like, we had a busy lifestyle, so we were eating out a lot and eating junk. And then, even though I tried to keep my meals good, I was eating in between because I wasn't satisfied with what I was having,
right,
kind of for dinner wise. So that's, I just said, right, I need to be accountable for myself because I want to be around for my kids for a long time. And I started up doing a little Instagram thing, just taking note of kind of what I was eating.
That was your Daily Dish?
That was my Daily Dish, yeah.
Okay.
So I just said, if I set up a page, I didn't have time to go back to a slimming group or anything like that. So I said, if I set up a little page, if 2 people watch it, I feel I'm accountable. I'll want to keep going with it. And I was eating kind of just what I had been eating before. And then one day something just clicked. I was like, I want to eat that crappy food. How do I do it? And then I just started making kind
of. So how do you get the taste but make it healthy?
Like, it's,
is that,
just,
is that yeah, that was the question you asked yourself?
Yeah, it's basically all I did was taking, say, for example, a Kentucky Fried Chicken or a Southern Fried Chicken and going, how can I make that? That's not going to be a million calories in it and it's not deep frying it. It's, you know, using chicken breast. It's,
yeah.
Just,
and step in, Carol, the air fryer, which is, you know, it's the star of the show here. It's centerpiece.
It's something we discovered just by accident. I think Gina had seen it and we picked one up. And I think Gina had this thing in her head, I'm going to cook everything. And there was one day she's like, I'm going to make an omelette in it. So you're not going to make an omelette in the air fryer. And she made an omelette and it was actually really nice.
Yeah, and I was like, I think I could cook a chicken in it. And like, I was like, it's not going to fit. I'll have to bait it into it. But it
and
did.
You cooked a chicken in it.
Yeah, oh, yeah. It's in my book.
But what's it cooking there now? It's heating up. It's heating up stuff.
No, it's cooking, yeah.
Yeah, we can open it up and have a look there. We're making souply. So basically, we went to Italy in our summer holidays and there was a little Italian guy who was like, I make you a special. And he made this for us. And this is
souply.
Souply. So it's like an arancini ball. So it's risotto rice. So it's basically, a lot of my food is store cupboard essentials. So you could literally make a masso meal out of whatever's in your press. So if you don't get a chance to go to the shops, or if you're, you know, stuck for an idea, root in the back of your press and I guarantee you'll find a recipe in there that'll make
the Daily Dish. It's a great book. 100 masso slimming meals for every day. There's everything there from chips to fajitas. There's loads of burger ideas there, loads of sauce ideas, savage snacks and some treats as well. Chili bowls, katsu curry, chorizo pie, all there. So a lot of it has been made over the last few days about pasta and tinned tomatoes.
Yeah.
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 So that you could do something with that very easily.
Absolutely,
if you have pasta, some garlic, some chili and olive oil, you can make the nicest pasta dish ever. So absolutely.
Fabulous spaghetti bolognese. Like, I think in people's heads, when they think of like pasta dishes like spaghetti bolognese, your brain goes, ah, Jesus, there's too much in that now. I'll just buy a jar. Yeah. And
but you can cook it from scratch.
So you just get a jar of passata, throw in a few herbs and spices, a bit of garlic, wham bam bam, and there you have a massive
and here's the big thing, which is going to be the big selling point of your book, is a homemade spice bag.
Oh yeah
and a it's spice in bag there. Burger as well.
Spice bag was voted the number one
takeaway food
throughout Ireland, so I mean it was inevitable that I was going to make a healthy version of it. It's so easy to make, you'd be very surprised, and you don't get that bloat. There's no MSG in it, and it is nicer, in fact, than what you get out of a takeaway. We actually went down to a lovely place down near us, and we showed their chefs. They were calling me chef. I was like, what? how to do a healthy spice bag, and they did a special in their restaurant for 4 days, and they had a massive right. turnover.
Yeah. Listen, because the day that's in and the week that's in, and we didn't have as much time as I would have wanted to talk to you, but you will come back in, won't you?
Absolutely.
We'd love to.
The book is in all good bookshops now. It's called The Daily Dish, Gina and Carol, also known as Mr. Dish. Thank you very much for coming
Thank you so
very
much.
And mind yourselves. Thanks, Carol. Oh, we're not supposed to shake hands there. Sorry.
It's out next Friday, the
20th. Friday. Yeah. I'll remind them.
Thank you.
The Daily Dish, D-A-L-Y. That's it from us. Mind yourselves out there. Be kind to each other. We're back on Monday at 3 o'clock. Mary Wilson is on the way.